Greatest Choice podcast, where we dive into the topics of singleness, fertility, motherhood, and choice. I'm your host, Katie B. Every episode, I'll deliver conversations with women in their fertile years who are grappling with what to do when life doesn't turn out as planned. You will also hear interviews with experts in the fields of fertility, personal development, choosing single motherhood, and more. Join us as we explore these topics and support each other along the way. Because what you decide to do with these years could be the single greatest choice you'll ever make, and you don't have to make it alone. This week, I'm joined by Calista Anderson, the founder of New Mom Boss. Calista helps new moms get ready for their coming baby during pregnancy and beyond. As a mama of three, a registered nurse, and a certified lactation consultant, Calista brings a lot of great information to the table. If you're currently trying to conceive or you're pregnant, I hope this episode will leave you feeling better prepared. And even if you're not, I hope you'll stick around. Calista and I kept chatting after the interview was done, and it was so interesting that I asked her if I could hit record again. So if you listen to the end, you'll hear some bonus content as well. At times our connection was a little bit glitchy, so I apologize for any sound quality issues in this episode, but I know you'll get so much from the conversation. Enjoy! Hi, Calista. Welcome to the Single Greatest Choice podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm so honored you asked me, and I'm so excited to talk with you today.
Yes, and you are one of our experts on the show. You are the New Mom Boss.
Correct. That's the name of my business, and that's also the name of my podcast, the New Mom Boss podcast. I'm a mom of three. I'm a registered nurse and a certified lactation counselor, and I coach and educate new moms, specifically first-time moms, guide moms from the second trimester on to the first 6 months after the baby's born, helping them plan and create strategies so that the entry into mommyhood isn't so stressful. I often think what I do is like hiring a wedding planner, but for having a baby. Many women hire a wedding planner maybe like a year in advance to get all the little details for that one day celebration. And I saw that women weren't doing the same for expecting a baby. And sure, you know, being a mom and having a baby has existed since the beginning of time, but I still saw this need for new moms to prepare and not just wing it once the baby got here. And also because I had my first two kids 13 months apart, I became a fast new mom expert. You know, I had a process for having a, you know, welcoming a new baby into the house. I became like a go-to person for my friends and coworkers. And I loved it. I want to help as many new moms as I can to make their new mom experience as positive as possible.
Well, that is amazing. And I'm so happy to have you here. My podcast listeners, many of them are currently trying to conceive or considering becoming moms on their own without a partner. And one of the biggest questions or concerns that comes up as I talk with women, both on the podcast and I also do some coaching for women in this space, it's just that big kind of overarching, can I really do this by myself? And I think there are so many pieces of that, all the way from, am I going to know how to feed my newborn to how am I going to pay for college? You know, it's like the whole gamut. But I think that having someone who can really walk us through those early stages, I'm just so happy that you and I connected and that you can share some of that information today that will hopefully help this to feel a little bit more manageable and just to know that there's support out there and that there are people like you that women can connect with and they don't have to do it all on their own.
Oh, I just want to send out my love and support to women who are, you know, making this decision, or maybe they've already made the decision and are moving forward to becoming a mom, the most important job you can have in your life. And you can do this. It is possible. It is hard, but it doesn't mean it's not doable. There is a lot to unpack in making that decision to have a baby. And maybe your listeners, or a lot of them, have already made that decision to move forward. And I just want to say that it is absolutely doable, whether you're having this child alone or with a partner. You can definitely set yourself up to create the best experience for you and your child. And I have three tips I want to give you guys today. They're huge tips, but they're the three big themes I would say to think about when you're pregnant or you're trying to get pregnant. You can start working on this ahead of time. The very first tip I would say is to build your village. And you know that it takes a village to raise a child, but I want to go into what the village actually entails to help you create that environment and support that you need for you and your baby. So first, I hope you have some family that is supportive and is local, because they are the ones that is like the first ring around you, right? If you have that. And if you don't, we can go work out further in the rings. But you want to enlist your family members, especially if they are local, to come and support you during your journey. Then secondly, I would say your best friends that you already have a good relationship with, who may be moms already and can be there as your guide. So your friends and family is like your first ring of support in your village. Then from there, you want to get professional support that's available. I have a guide called How to Get a Good Latch, and there's a worksheet in there. I'll let Katie know about that. We can attach that to the show notes. It's a worksheet that helps you build a breastfeeding support group of your own, and it has you choose a certified lactation counselor. Not that you're hiring them already, but you're just doing your homework to find the breastfeeding support that you may need after having the baby. And even before having the baby, going to classes and talking to these women with breastfeeding experience. So that when the baby gets here, you already have these names and numbers, groups that are local that you can go to for help. Then childcare. This childcare piece of your village is huge. You will need to look into your options beforehand after you find out you're pregnant. I would start looking at your childcare options, and there are so many, from, you know, a nanny to an au pair to a family member staying with you for X number of weeks. Childcare when you go back to work. These are all the things that you can start looking at even in the beginning of your pregnancy, so that you're not rushing and stressing out about it when that time comes where you do need the help in the first few weeks, or it is time to go back to work and you need help with childcare. Getting these kinds of details ahead of time will definitely relieve some of the stress in that area of childcare.
If someone has no idea where to start with looking into childcare, do you have any suggestions for how to go about that, or even what to be looking for?
Yes, it depends what you're looking for. So there's different au pair websites. An au pair is like a live-in nanny, and they're usually more affordable than a nanny that you would get from, you know, a different agency, because they have a separate salary, which is lessened because they are living with you for free room and board. And they could be someone from out of the country. And there are au pairs that are also within the United States. They tend to be younger women. And there's several agencies out there. You would just have to Google, because there's a lot of them. And then for local nanny care, I recommend care.com. Well, first I would recommend ask family and friends if they know anybody. And then if they don't, I would also look into care.com, because the background checks have been done and you get a lot of information, you know, on their profiles already. Mm-hmm. So that would be another place to look into. It depends on what part of the country you live in and if this app is even available in your area. But Nextdoor, it's an app for specific neighborhoods. I've seen a lot of people asking for nannies in that app or that arena. Mm-hmm. So it's always nice to have someone that was recommended or referred versus someone who you totally don't know, or also going through an agency like an au pair agency or care.com.
Right. And some of those suggestions are really great for our US listeners. And I also have quite a few listeners in Australia and the UK and different places that may have similar options. They would just have to look into it. I think one of the concerns for single mothers, and something I've thought about myself, is between looking into a daycare facility or having someone in my home, there are huge benefits to having that one-on-one care and having someone in the home. However, as the only parent, if that caretaker became sick or unavailable somehow, then that really is kind of an added layer of complication, because when you have a partner, between the two of you, you can kind of figure out how you're going to handle all of a sudden the lack of childcare. Whereas for a single parent, I think it's even more difficult. So I've thought about that, and I don't know, honestly. I mean, I'm not even pregnant yet. I don't know what I'll do for childcare, but I have kind of weighed that in with considering having a nanny, just that then you're really reliant on that one other person.
Right. And that was going to be my next sub point to your village, is to have a network of emergency call people, other friends that are nearby or coworkers who are moms, because they'll get it. Have your top three emergency people that you can call on, and you can do the same for them. If they need something, it's an emergency exchange, you know, and, you know, talk to them about it beforehand. And if you have absolutely no choice, like, will you be my last resort for a day until you can figure something else out? And having those top three calls, I think, will alleviate some of that stress of, like, my only caretaker is sick. And maybe it's not just that, whatever disaster happens, you know, you need people in your village to help you in case of an emergency. And yeah, and a couple other things about building your village, you really need to build this village ahead of time, because sure, you can do it when the baby's here, but it's not going to be your top priority. And then when you really need it, it's going to be really hard to pull it together. So a couple other things to put in your village is looking for mommy and me groups and other moms that have babies still, young children who you can connect, because it can get lonely having a new baby. You feel isolated, you're staying home a lot more, and you lack sleep, and you just don't feel like yourself. So you will need that connection with other moms who really get it. And sure, you want your friends and family who are going to check in on you as well, but maybe they have way older kids and have forgotten how it really feels. The good thing about pregnancy and the newborn stage is you do get a lot of amnesia as time goes on. I think that's nature's way of having us forget the hardship of it so we can have another baby. So I would connect with other moms with young children, or make friends with other women who are pregnant, so you go through this journey with somebody else. And then the last thing in your village I would recommend is to look for mental health providers, therapists, and other types of providers. Check them out and just note their practice, their name and number, just in case, because postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety is so common after having a baby in the first 6 months, that if that does arise, you have someone to call. You've done your research, you know who you would want to ask for help. And so again, you're not doing that in the thick of, you know, newborn phase.
That is so helpful, I think, because an added layer of being a single mom is that you don't necessarily have someone there all the time noticing that you're struggling or pointing out to you, you know, how different you're responding or reacting emotionally. So with depression in general, it's hard to see it when you're in it. And so I think, you know, if you're struggling, just that added layer of having to find someone to call might just be too much. So I think that's so smart to have that prepared ahead of time, just in case.
Right. I did go through postpartum depression with my third child. Then it was my husband who noticed it. And so I can imagine having a child on your own, there isn't that person there to notice the difference, like you just said. So maybe if you have history, start connecting with your healthcare provider, having a weekly check-in so that you stay on top of this. Or if you have a friend or family member that you're getting in touch with weekly, you can't do this alone. If you don't have the help, you have to really curate your help and stay on top of it. You need to find people who, or not find, they are in your life already. You just have to ask them for help. And that's the other thing, is that we don't like to ask for help. We feel like we're strong, we're independent, we can do everything and anything. And a lot of that is true. And we are strong, partnered or unpartnered. And especially if you're a single mother by choice, it is in your best interest and the best interest of your baby to ask for help. asking for help is not a negative thing. It's actually a sign of strength because you are supporting your own little family and giving yourself and your baby what it needs.
Okay, so building the tribe, and what else? What other suggestions do you have for us?
My second big tip is to create your postpartum nesting plan. So this is more like the fourth trimester. That is a term coined by Dr. Harvey Karp. He says that babies are not really done growing at 9 months in the womb, but our bodies kind of evict them. They need an extra 3 months to finish growing, but we have to do that outside of the womb. And so we want to mimic the womb on the outside. So that's the whole fourth trimester for the baby. You know, that's why they like to be swaddled and they like to be cuddled and they like the dark. We want to mimic the womb, just like Dr. Karp says. During the fourth trimester for the baby, there's also like this postpartum period for the mom where we just have to slow down. It's really a time of rest and recovery. Your body has just performed this miracle and it needs time to heal. I think our culture is focused on the bounce back and getting our bodies back and going back to our normal social life. And this is such a sacred time, the first 3 months after having a baby. You want to create like a sanctuary for you and the baby and accept the help that comes to you. But you also need the boundary for you and the baby. You know, everybody's going to want to see the baby and that's fine, but you have to be a little bit of a gatekeeper for that or have someone else be your gatekeeper. It's a balance of like asking and accepting help, but also limiting the interactions with a lot of people just so you and your baby could take the time to bond, to heal, have this quiet, serene time while the baby gets used to being in the outside world and you're getting used to being a new mom, and your body will go through such a remarkable change too after you have the baby in the first 3 months. Your uterus is shrinking. There's a lot of healing. I don't want to be too graphic, but there's like bleeding still happening. There's, you know, all this stuff that you need to do to take care of yourself. And that's another piece I think our culture is missing, is like the mom in the fourth trimester is going through a radical change as well. The body is trying to return to normal, but we don't want to rush it. And we want to just heal and focus on like a serene environment so that the baby and the mom can bond and heal.
Yes, you're so right. I was just speaking with another podcast guest who has a 6-week-old right now, and she was talking about having given birth during COVID and the fact that, you know, she couldn't have all of the visitors and all of the activity and all of the help that she had planned in the beginning, but how actually that ended up being such a huge blessing because she is in her little cocoon and it's just her and her baby and they've really had that time to bond. And she said it's not as hard as she thought it would be because it's all she's doing. You know, I mean, she's totally, completely focused on her child. And I think that that's one of the benefits that I see of becoming a single mother by choice, is that it really is just you and your baby. And of course, it's important to have those family and friends who are around to support you. But at the end of the day, it's just you and that baby. And that is such a beautiful connection, I think.
Right. And everything else can wait. These first 3 months are so precious that time really does slow down if you let it and just be in that bubble with your baby, the skin to skin and nourishing your body and just letting it heal and not rushing everything. I think the whole COVID pandemic situation has forced a lot of the world to slow down. And I didn't even think about that for new moms. I actually felt really bad for like the moms having babies during this time, but that is a silver lining. It is much more slowed down. There's not a whole lot happening out there anyway. And it's forcing us to focus on our everything inside the home. Mm-hmm. And so that would be a perfect environment for a new baby.
Yes.
And another thing in this postpartum time, the first few months, is, you know, people want to help. When people say, let me know if I can do anything for you, you know, take them up on it. One thing that has been done for me and I've done for others is to have a meal train And it's such a lifesaver in the first few months. So just in case you don't know what a meal train is, back in the day, women would just drop off casseroles on your porch and, you know, help you out that way. But there's a website that's actually called mealtrain.com, and you or someone, one of your friends or family, can set this up for you. It's basically a calendar that people sign up to bring you food. That's one less thing you have to worry about after having a baby, is like, what am I going to eat? Because you do need a lot of food to help you produce your milk and for the healing and everything else. So that's a great tool to have, using that Meal Train website. That way, not one person is in charge of who's going to bring what when. And also, when they do come to drop this off, you can just have a cooler out on your porch. And they can just drop off your food if it's a time where you're napping with the baby or you didn't have any sleep. Because right now is not the time, this first few months, to socialize if you're not up for it yet. You don't have to force yourself. And those who love you will understand that, and they will help you and be of service to you by dropping some food off. And then, you know, you can socialize another time in a few more weeks when you're more up for it. And, you know, the thing about having visitors, even though you want to have visitors and you're having a good time with them, you're going to want to spend more time than your body is ready for. So when you do start to have visitors, limiting the visit to like an hour or whatever you think your body really needs, you can tell them ahead of time, like, hey, you know, I'm probably going to want to chat for like 3 hours, but will you help me limit our time together to like an hour, because I really need to get a nap, or I really need to rest or take a shower or whatever. During the visits, you can have someone hold your baby so you could go take a shower, because you need to schedule your showers.
So I love the idea of asking for very specific help. I had a suggestion from a new mom who said that throughout her pregnancy, and especially towards the end, a lot of friends and family members would say, just let me know if you need anything. And she would say, I'm creating an email list. Would it be okay if I add you to my email list of people who are willing to help me? And that way, as a new mom, if she needed, you know, she was running out of diapers or formula or wipes or something, she could just shoot an email to this group of people who had agreed and say, is anyone going to the store? Could anyone grab me some diapers while you're out? And those people had ahead of time sort of agreed to be a part of that. And I just think that that's such a great thing, instead of sitting there wondering who can I call or who can I ask right now, to have a pre-planned list of people who've already agreed to be asked.
Right. Yeah, that's great. The same thing with the meal train. You could actually ask, you could put tasks in there too, like walking my dog or errands that, you know, you need help with. People can sign up for that too, as opposed to just a meal.
I've thought of so many things, like I mow my own lawn, and I'm thinking, well, how long will it be after having a baby before I can mow my lawn? And do I need to get a lawn service, or like, how am I going to manage that? But those are all, like, as those things come up in the months before I'm even pregnant or, you know, close to delivering, just to kind of keep a running list and start to match that help that I need with the people who would love to help. They just need to know what I need.
Right. And that's one of the things I go over with my clients and in my course, is that towards the end of your pregnancy, automating everything that can be automated. So automating your bills and things like that, taking away a lot of your tasks and monthly duties, so you can assign it to other people or automate, like I mentioned, or just cancel it. If you can live without it for like 2 months, the less the better. So yeah. And then the last big theme tip I would recommend is, I just talked about the postpartum period, which is really like the fourth trimester, and then also preparing for the fifth trimester. And the point is to do little things throughout the pregnancy, so that when you get to that point in the postpartum or post baby, it's a lot less work that you have to do. And you're probably already doing this kind of stuff already if you're pregnant, but finding out when you're going to go back to work, checking your state and your company's policies and laws. The breastfeeding education also should happen before the baby's here. So I didn't go over that, but that's part of the process of preparing for a baby that I go through with clients. In regards to preparing for the fifth trimester, making sure you have enough breast milk stocked. working with your childcare provider that's going to help you watch your baby when you go back to work, and maybe setting up a different structure if your job allows it, you know, working from home like 1 or 2 days a week, if that is something you can negotiate. But it's the whole returning back to work, returning back to kind of your previous life, although your life will never be the same, but it's even more beautiful. It's just getting the new life set up. The fifth trimester is really kind of your emerging back into life as a new mom, where you're pretty much healed. You're trying to get back to feeling like your old self again. You know, your body's kind of returning to your pre-pregnancy strength, and maybe your clothes are, you want to get back into your old clothes. Nothing wrong with postpartum weight or anything, but you have a whole closet full of clothes that you're probably just wanting to get back to. That's a whole nother thing that I do, like with clients, is preparing your postpartum closet. I make one section of my closet my postpartum wardrobe. All my loose fitting clothes, all the maternity clothes that I bought or had or saved is in that section. Because for the first few months after the baby, you're not going to fit in your regular clothes. And if you're breastfeeding, which I hope everyone tries as best as they can to breastfeed, you're going to need easy access to your nursing bra. And the wardrobe is something that we don't really think about because there's so many things to think about. But that is like a big piece that will help us succeed in breastfeeding, is if we have clothes that are easily accessible and easy, whether you're pumping or breastfeeding. So yeah, that's a lot of what I go over in the fifth trimester, getting ready to go back to work or just kind of come out of your new mom cocoon. Also, you need those mommy friends, because there is so much to talk about being a mom that your non-mommy friends who love you dearly, they will only be able to tolerate so much, and they won't get it, you know? So that's the village that will help you in this department of life. Of course, your other friends who have just a different lifestyle or different experience are going to be there for other parts of your life. But during this, I want to say, acute stage of new mommyhood, you need to surround yourself with people who have that experience.
Mm-hmm. And do you have thoughts about the difference between an in-person village, which I know is really important to have that person that can drop something off or, you know, come by and lend you a hand, but also there's the possibility of an online village. So I'm just curious about your thoughts about online versus in-person.
Oh, definitely. There's a lot of Facebook groups, which I would look for one or create one with the online friends or contacts that you have to create a more intimate group, because some of those other groups are just, you know, thousands of people, just to create that more intimate relationship with other moms who aren't local. And definitely even those who are not local can participate in the meal train, because a lot of the meal train's deliveries, even though they're local, they're not even bringing the food themselves. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, there's Uber Eats, there's, you know, all the food delivery apps out there that they can order from. They can participate by giving gift cards. Yeah, more than ever, I think people who are not local and friends online are able to connect and participate and help.
Yeah, I was talking to another new mom who was saying how important it's been for her to have kind of two different circles of support. One is other single mothers by choice, because there are some specific topics, things like how do you talk to your child about being donor conceived? There's some very specific nuances to being a single mother by choice. So you definitely want to have that support, but then also you want the local support of the friend that can just swing by at a minute's notice, or can pick your kid up, you know, when he's sick at school and you can't get there fast enough, or, you know, those types of things. So I think it's really important to have both. And then on top of that, the online community, I think, is just really helpful, because it's such an easy, fast way to connect. But I think you're right about, you definitely want to look for ways to create real intimacy, where you're not just posting in a giant group and then not truly connecting with the people who are responding, but where you really have a relationship.
Right. Yeah. Those big groups tend to be information overload, and there isn't that deeper connection. It doesn't help with the feeling of isolation. And yes, for your audience who have this very specific experience of being a single mother by choice, you definitely want to connect with other women with the same experience, because no one will understand except those women. And that's exactly right. You know, you build your own tribe with the kind of support and advice that you need. And our dear friends who don't have that same experience, but they really want to help, those friends are great as well. It is important to have both types of circles, and maybe they overlap and maybe they don't, but you need to surround yourself with both.
Yeah, I think it's back to your first point about building your tribe and just thinking about what are the different ways that you need your tribe to support you, and then making sure that you have the right setup of people who are able to support in that way, and knowing that there are certain people you're going to go to for certain things and other people for other things, and just having a diverse group of support. I think that's so important. Well, okay. So I think we talked, you had three points that you shared with us. Will you just kind of go over those three again, just to kind of summarize?
Sure. So the first and most important, and the thing you can start working on now, is to start building your village. All the support people in person, online, the professionals you may need, building your village/tribe now. And then once you're pregnant, start creating your postpartum nesting plan. You want to provide yourself with the need that you help ahead of time, but also focus on the rest and recovery and healing of your body and the bonding with your baby during the first 3 months. And then preparing for the fifth trimester, this is you may be going back to work and going back to a little bit more of your social life outside of your home.
Yes, those are excellent tips. And I thank you so much for sharing them. And before we go, will you please share with us just a little bit more about your business and how you work with new moms and how women who are interested can connect with you and your work?
Sure, I'd love to. So my business is New Mom Boss, and you can go to newmomboss.com to get more information. And I help moms via one-on-one coaching from second trimester to the fifth trimester. And also I'm launching a course in September, which is an online course with six modules, you know, taking them from, it's not in chronological order, but six modules, six focuses to help you prepare for your baby and prepare yourself for your new self. And that's launching in September. It's an online course plus a group coaching online.
Is that a course that you take while you're pregnant, or like when is the ideal time to be participating?
Right. I recommend second trimester, like early second trimester. You can start the first trimester, but a lot of the things are more second trimester focused. And, you know, a lot of women are hesitant to do a lot in the first trimester. I understand that. So I would say second trimester. And it's called New Mom Prep School. That launches in September. And so I go along with the clients. It's not like you take the course and then you're on your own. You take the course and I release the modules week by week, and weekly we will meet online as a group. And so I go through it with the students till the end. And then you'll also have the other students in there to connect with the Facebook group. And then lastly, I have the New Mom Boss podcast, which will be already released by the time this airs. And I give tips and tricks, and I bring on other experts as well to help new moms navigate through their pregnancy. There's a lot of things I didn't do in my pregnancies, or I didn't research, only because I didn't have the time and energy. And so I want to bring those other experts on so that you don't have to do a lot of research and digging on your own on subjects that are just on your periphery. So that's my podcast coming out next week, which is June 18th.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And I am very excited. Is there anything else that you want to share with the listeners before we sign off?
No, I just want to wish all you women who are taking this very brave step in your life all the best and all the luck. And I wish you love and support. And I'm here if you need help. You can tune into the podcast for free advice and guidance. And I have tons of guides and freebies that I have on the podcast, or you can go to my website or my Instagram. I have a link there with a couple guides for different things. you can always message me there or email me. Anything you want to find out about me is on my website.
Okay, perfect. I will link newmomboss.com in the show notes as well. So it's easy to just click and find you very easily. It's been wonderful talking to you today, and I look forward to working with you in the future.
Thank you, Katie. I appreciate it.
After the interview, Calista and I kept chatting, and she started to tell me about her personal connection to donor conception. I asked if it would be okay to hit record again and share some of this with you guys. As someone who's using a donor, I find it fascinating to talk with someone who's on the other end of the process. So here's the part of the conversation that wasn't originally in the interview.
I want to say that, you know, I have a connection to your audience in a way that I totally understand and get the desire to be a mom, even if it's going to be a choice to be a single mom. Even when I was a little girl, I've always wanted to be a mom. And when I was a nursing student, I was approached by a reproductive doctor, like a reproductive specialist, infertility specialist. And he worked next door to my office. And he asked if I wanted to donate eggs. Donate is not the right word because I did get paid, but that's what they called it, you know.
Right.
And I thought about it and I was like, yes, I would, because if there was something challenging or an obstacle that prevented me from having my own child, I would definitely use somebody's egg to, you know, have a child. And so I went through that process of, you know, the injections and the retrieval, because I totally understand that biological desire to want to have a child and to bring life into this world and just to be a mom and just give back to the world with a child. So I get where your audience is coming from. Mm-hmm. At least I think I do.
And many of the women who listen do have used or are planning to use donor eggs. So that is a very close connection, I think, with the audience. And I'm curious, because all of us have thought so deeply about what it means to have a donor conceived child and how to talk to our child about being donor conceived and all of that. Do you know what happened with the eggs that you donated, or have you heard any?
Yeah, I did. I did ask she was the medical director afterwards. I was like, so what happened? Did it take or not take? And she was like, well, that's confidential. I'm not allowed to tell you. And then she said, but it didn't. But I don't know if she was just telling me that or if that was, you know, and I don't know. When I did it, they said there were two couples that were interested in me. So I don't know if they used more than one person used my eggs. I'm not sure because they don't give out that information. They do like a pretty extensive interview with the donor. So I did one. And one of the questions was, how would you feel if the child found out about you and wanted to look you up and get to know you or contact you? Mm-hmm. And I said, that was fine. So who knows if there's a child out there that was conceived out of my donating.
Yeah.
And I hope so. I hope it worked for somebody. And I'm totally open to if a child wanted to look me up and talk to me. I think transparency is, you know, the best route, because they may find out on their own anyway. And I think just being open about it. And I think it's just so loving for a mom to go through all the things that they go through to have a child, no matter what way it is, you know. And I think the child, this is just my opinion, I'm not a psychologist of any sort, but I think a child knowing that their mom went through so much just to have them is very loving. This is a very, very wanted child.
Yeah.
Not an accident, on a whim. This was a very intentional child, you know, and
right.
That is even deeper, I think, than some of the other ways to have a kid.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if you know this, but women who use donor eggs or donor sperm oftentimes are required to go through some reproductive counseling before they conceive. And so part of that is talking through the implications of being open with your child about donor conception and that sort of thing. And, you know, nowadays there's really no way for those types of things that used to be kept secret. Oftentimes they're just not going to be, right? So you know, you're at some point your child's going to do a DNA test, or, you know, they're going to figure it out. And especially if you're a single mother by choice, like, for sure, they're going to have questions about where they came from. You know, most of us in the community have put a lot of thought into what it means to have a donor conceived child. And there are communities out there for sure of adults who were donor conceived, who many of them didn't know until they were older, found out in a way that was pretty hurtful, or, you know, just painful because it was kept secret. So there's been a lot of learning, I think, especially with the DNA tests and things that make it so easy to uncover these types of things that can't be really kept secret anymore.
Right.
Yeah. So I think a lot of us are thinking really hard about how to talk with our children about how they came to be, and framing it in a way, like you said, that, you know, it was such an intentional choice. And I am pretty uncomfortable still with the title or the label single mother by choice. And I've talked about that on the podcast and on Instagram, that I feel like I'm going to be a single mother by necessity. Like, I feel like I'm going to be a mother by choice, and I happen to be single, so that's where I am, but I'm not choosing necessarily. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't choose to be a single mother. But I do think it's important that that word choice is in there, because it is so intentional. And other choices would be to not be a mother, to, you know, just get knocked up with the wrong person because you so desperately want to be a mom. You know, I mean, there are all different ways that you can approach this situation. And I do think that this is probably the most intentional and thoughtful in terms of really taking the steps and paying, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars, and, you know, going through a lot of rigorous medical testing and all of that. It is very much a choice.
Yeah, I love that, because it is a choice that you're making, but it is more an intention, and you're not single by choice. It's just your circumstance right now, and that may not be forever. But the motherhood choice and motherhood intention is forever, and
yes,
doing it intentionally, which is beautiful. Not to say that if you got knocked up by accident, you couldn't be a great mother also, but being intentional about being a mom is already, it speaks volumes about how you're going to be a mom, you know, because you are so intentional about it that everything else when the baby comes is going to just be just as intentional.
Okay. And I think I'm reframing. I think I'm a single mother by intention from now on. I think, oh, I think I you just re, you just reframed it for me.
I love it, 'cause it's true. It's a choice is kind of lighter and not, it's not a heavily weighed thing, you know, it's
right.
Multiple, well, it makes choice.
It, right.
It's
it makes
multiple
it sound
intention.
Like, right. Like, you had a menu and you chose this, like, on the menu of things that came up for me was never that partner that I thought would be a great dad and a great partner. And that stinks. Like, that stinks that that was not a choice, but given the choices that I had, I know that I made the best one out of what was available to me. And I think that's, it's important. Like, you know, there are women for sure, and I've spoken with them, who truly don't, they're not interested in having a partner. They really are single mothers by choice. Like, that is what they want. For a lot of us, it is, okay, it's a function of, you know, age and time and desire. And something that comes up a lot is the death of a parent or the illness of a parent. A lot of women sort of wake up when they realize my parents aren't going to be around forever, and here I am waiting for this dude. Like, I'm swiping on dating apps and waiting for some stranger to, like, come in. And meanwhile, my own parents want to be grandparents, and that's something that I can give them now.
Right. And, you know, I relate to your story a lot. Our timelines are very similar. I was married. I'm on my second marriage. I got married young. The next step was to have a kid, but I knew I shouldn't have married him. We got divorced when I was 27. And, like, I didn't doubt I was going to meet somebody. And I actually did. But if I hadn't, you know, the fork in the road could have been that for me. And I would absolutely do this on my own if I had to, because I've always wanted to be a mom. And I know so many women in the same situation. It's just, they're beautiful inside and out. They should be with somebody, you know, now to have a baby, but it's hard out there. And, you know, I could easily have done that to myself. So I really understand where you're coming from and where your audience is coming from. And I feel that.
At one point, I really felt like even considering this path was such a failure. And, you know, it said something terrible about me. It said, you know, I was unlovable, undesirable. Like, you know, I was just kind of like the leftover of the the women out in the dating pool. You know, it just felt really awful. Being in a relationship or not, it's not a value statement of who you are. Like, it's just your current circumstance. And so seeing other women who I respect and admire and enjoy and, you know, I'm just drawn to, who are making this choice, like, that is so helpful, just to realize these are just regular people. And really not just regular people, but people who in my mind are even like more empowered and like go-getters, because they not just thought about or considered this choice, but they jumped in knowing how hard it's going to be and what society might think about them. And, you know, they're doing it anyway. So it's a group I'm definitely proud to be a part of now.
Right. And I think it's only growing.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Like, in vitro was not that common 20 years ago. And now it's super common. And I think being a single mom by intention is only going to grow. And in 20 years, it's, you know, that tribe is just going to be huge. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I won't keep you any longer. I know you've got your own podcast to record today, and I'm so excited to listen to it. Thank you for joining me for this episode of the Single Greatest Choice podcast. I'm your host, Katie B. You can learn about me and this project on my website, singlegreatestchoice.com. That's also the place to go if you're interested in being a future podcast guest. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a minute to rate and review in iTunes. That helps more women to find our show. Until next time, I'm sending you all my love and support as you go about making the choices that will create a life you love.